For the past two decades, CJSF 90.1 FM has been the game-changing radio station people have tuned in to listen, share, discuss, and celebrate. From authors, actors, and entertainers to journalists, business leaders, and sports figures, CJSF has welcomed esteemed guests giving you the best in music, news, and spoken word, undoubtedly changing the sound of community radio since 2003. CJSF, diverse, independent, yours.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded August 9th, 2023. Well, over the weekend, Global Affairs Canada announced it was suspending development assistance to Niger due to the overthrow of the government there. Ottawa said, quote, Canada reiterates its solidarity with the people of Niger and its support for democracy, peace, inclusive governance, and the rule of law. Clearly, though, when it comes to Canadian foreign policy, there are coups and then there are coups. Historically, Ottawa has either stood silently by or, more worryingly, played a major role in fomenting and supporting coups it deemed advantageous around the world, all putting to the lie its high road rhetoric of support for peace, democracy, and inclusive governance, never mind rule of law, that murky precept dredged up only when Canadian corporate interests are challenged by natives with the temerity to control sovereign wealth and resources. Eve Engler is an independent Montreal-based journalist and author. He's written 12 books on Canadian foreign policy and hosts the Canadian Foreign Policy Hour, a weekly examination of the country's actions in the world. Eve's many articles appear across the internet and at his website, eveengler.com, where his latest piece, Democracy, Far Down List of Canadian Interests in Niger, provides facts so disturbing to Canada's international reputation, they remain unreported in the nation's corporate and state media. Eve Engler in the first half. And it's not only in Canada's foreign policy where the myth of its democracy-loving ways is confounded by its systematic erasure of those principles. Here at home, too, Ottawa is waging a determined campaign to roll back the clock on citizens' rights back, say, 1,000 years, predating the English Common Law's foundational habeas corpus legislation. Right now, August 9th, 2023, four men have been held with neither bail nor trial since February of last year. Ray McGuinness is an author and retired educator cum reporter after attending the Public Order Emergency Commission hearings in Ottawa last November. His latest article on some of the enduring aftermath of the unprecedented invocation of the Emergency Act, Coutts 4 denied bail in prison in Canada for over 500 days without trial, Are They Political Prisoners?, appears at the Substack site Propaganda in Focus and serves as damning indictment of the Trudeau regime's disconnect from Western traditions of human rights as understood for more than a millennia. Ray McGuinness and Canadian jurisprudence's trip back to a medieval future in the second half. But first, Eve Engler and Canada's dismal democracy record abroad. Well, welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Well, Eve, I took your book, Canada and Africa, 300 Years of Aid and Exploitation, off the shelf in preparation for this chat, but I wasn't prepared, again, for the naked truth of our country, our Canada's history in Africa. Now Global Affairs says it has suspended development in Niger. Is this something, Eve, that Nigerians should welcome?
I think it could be. The Canadian aid policy in Africa, particularly and globally, is driven by two things, primarily, which is one main thing is geostrategic question that goes all the way back to the Colombo plan, which is basically to not have a real decolonization in India and to keep India close to the NATO world or the Britain and the, you know, former colonial powers. And so it's always been geopolitical. And the obvious way you see that today is with regards to the close association between the Canadian military, the U.S. military, and Canadian aid. So the second motivation of Canadian aid is usually about improving the prospects of Canadian corporate interests. So I think there's a there's a strong correlation with governments that are trying to better the prospects of the population, a reduction or a diminishing of Canadian and U.S. and or other some other Western countries' aid. So there's sort of like an inverse correlation between the governments that are really working for the people and where Canada is willing to put up money. Now, having said that, there are, you know, the individual projects oftentimes can have beneficiaries, even if the broader political dynamic that the aid usually contributes to is not a good one.
I'm looking, as I said, at your book, Canada and Africa, again, and I'm not sure if it was a bestseller in this country. I fear it probably wasn't. And I think that most Canadians still live under the illusion of Canadian beneficence in the world. You begin the book with a quote from Lord Byron, the English poet, "Judge me by my actions, not by my words." In a way of giving some context to what's going on in Niger and Africa generally, vis-a-vis Canadian interests there, could you give us a little bit of history to provide context without going too deep into it? But for those that might think that we're being overly cynical in judging Canada's real motives when they give aid or when they make pronouncements, as they've done on the current situation following the coup in Niger.
Well, Canadians helped conquer large swaths of the continent. Hundreds of Canadians fought, were trained at the Royal Military College in large part for that purpose back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. There were Canadians that were governors of three different British colonies, Ghana, Northern Nigeria, Kenya. There was a program in the 1920s and onwards to take McGill, University of Toronto, Queen's graduates to be part of officers of colonial officials for the British, principally in Africa, elsewhere as well. And it was justified as bringing them into the white man's burden. There were, you know, a formal support by Ottawa for the colonial regimes all across the continent. Then during as the decolonization got going, huge amounts of Canadian weaponry were given, not sold, but given to the colonial powers while they were suppressing independence movements in the 1950s through NATO's mutual assistance program. So while there's 400,000 French troops in Algeria, Canada was giving bullets, knowing full well where those bullets were being used. In fact, they actually changed the rules so they could be less hidden. French could be less hidden in their use of Canadian weapons in Algeria. You know, afterwards, the Canada's central role in the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, the independence leader of the Congo, helped, very important role in the overthrow of Kwame Nkrumah, Pan-Africanist in Ghana. Hundreds of millions of dollars, billions, if you include through the World Bank and IMF, direct and indirect Canadian aid to support structural adjustment programs through the 1980s and 90s that devastated economies, that led to, you know, mass uprisings where often hundreds, you know, dozens of people were killed. And then, you know, last 30 years, one of the main beneficiaries of these structural adjustment programs have been Canadian mining companies. And Canadian mining companies have just, you know, huge players all across the continent. And I would say today, the principal motivation of Canadian policy in probably about 15 or 20 African countries is basically just how to help Canadian mining companies take out more profit from those countries. So that's, you know, the background to what we're seeing, you know, with regards to Niger. And another part, I guess, and maybe another really important background to Niger that gets almost no attention in the media, but it's like all of the politicians and all the sides within Niger and surrounding countries, they all link the political problems they're having to what we did in Libya in 2011, right? We bombed and destroyed Libya. The African Union at the time stated absolutely clear. They worked really hard for a negotiated solution, but they said their big fear was that this was, these weapons were going to be going all out. That was going to fuel terrorism. The Canadian military had internal assessments going back a couple years that the forces in east of Libya that we ended up supporting, that they were, you know, jihadist forces. The Canadian military joked, the Air Force joked that they were Al-Qaeda's Air Force. That's reported on by David Puglesi, an Ottawa citizen. They were joking they were Al-Qaeda's Air Force as they bombed Gaddafi's government and ultimately, of course, you know, assassinated him. And that spilled south, as was to be expected, as was the African Union mentioned repeatedly. And that's a important background to what we're seeing today. And basically, the NATO countries that, you know, destroyed Libya then used the growth of jihadist violence in Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali, they use that to justify deploying troops to those countries. And Niger, you know, most importantly in recent time, is that we have to, you know, we have to clean up the mess that we created with regards to Libya. And so it's a whole like cycle of you know, violence and interference, and that just needs to be, well, first of all, needs to be recognized, and secondly, needs to be stopped.
Well, has Canada made statements that you're aware of? I don't recall hearing one expressions of regret, or the what we hear usually. Oh yeah, we made some mistakes there concerning Libya. Has that been an official pronouncement in this country that maybe what Canada did, what Canada contributed to, and the ruination of that country and the knock-on effects you describe, was in error or something that we were culpable for?
No, unlike Obama, who at least did do that, I think, you know, very somewhat cheaply, but did do that. No, there's no. So if you take the NDP's policy, right, the NDP when Gaddafi was killed, the interim leader of the NDP, Nicole Turmel, I believe is pronounced her last name, she put out this unbelievable statement of celebration of what Canada had done in Libya, and to, you know, to the best of my knowledge, that statement stands. There's been no no reformulation of that, and that's the NDP, right? You know, let alone the Conservatives that hosted that big. They spent, you know, significant money after Libya celebrating. There was a bit of a scandal how much money they spent in hosting a big thing where Harper spoke, and they had a flyover with the fighter jets, you know, they even had the Canadian Special Forces participate, which officially never participated in Libya, even though, you know, we did know that they did, and that was in complete direct contravention of the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1970 and 1973, which were very explicit about no foreign forces on the ground of Libyan territory. And, you know, Canadian Special Forces were on the ground, and that was basically admitted at that, the celebration after the destruction of Libya. You know, military coups, I think, are generally bad things. And there are a few instances in history where, you know, progressives sort of came to power through military coups. So I'm very cautious of this military coup. It seems while the ousted president was clearly a French, American, and Canadian, for that matter, ally, you know, there was at least some nominal electoral legitimacy, whereas the presidential guard that ousted him, or in fact didn't oust him, they've sequestered him in his presidential palace, it seems, that they you know, they don't have any democratic legitimacy. They do appear to have some degree of popular support. They have made lots of anti-imperialist pronouncements, and some, they seem to have made some moves in that direction. But how much of this is a sort of internal power struggle between the presidential guard and somewhat losing of their standing within the military structure, and, you know, some sort of internal dispute within the ruling circles in Niger, and how much of it is going to, you know, is actually more towards the pronouncements of the military officials. I don't really know. I think that the whole business of ECOWAS, the community of West African states, the supposed to be an economic community, but it has a big military side to it as well. The idea of them militarily intervening to decide who is the leader of Niger is, I think, a very dangerous possibility, and almost certainly will not happen without active U.S., French, and Canadian backing. And I, as I pointed out in a piece I wrote, which is mostly based on stuff that's in the Canada and Africa book, Canada has been, going back more than 15 years, was involved in setting up ECOWAS's security, standby security force designed to intervene in regional affairs. And that's part of a broader policy that Canada, the U.S., is part of AFRICOM, the U.S. Africa Command, of building up these regional military forces that are basically designed to act as U.S., French, Canadian gendarmes to control different parts of the continent. And American officials have said that they prefer the local force to do their their military work. And I think that if we do see a military intervention in Niger, which seems to be a possibility, it's almost certainly because of U.S., French, Canadian pushing.
Well, I saw a great cartoon by the Brazilian cartoonist Carlos Lato just the other day, yesterday I think it was, and it depicts Macron, the French president, in 19th century garb, waving a saber with a gendarme behind him, as you describe it, an African gendarme, and Macron, spittle coming from his mouth in rage, is yelling, "Take back Niger for me." And I think that really sums up, or anybody watching what's going on in Ukraine, if you don't understand what a proxy war means, then that should elucidate that point. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Yves Engler. Yves is an independent Montreal-based journalist and author. He's written 12 books on Canadian foreign policy, and he hosts the Canadian Foreign Policy Hour. It's a weekly examination of this country, Canada's actions around the world. His latest article at his website, eveengler.com, is "Democracy, Far Down the List of Canadian Interests in Niger." Yeah, you mentioned, Yves, that this militaristic belligerence being promised by ECOWAS, it came quickly, led by the chair of that body. That's the Economic Community of West African States, by the way. Their chair is Bola Tinubu, and I was just reading an interesting piece done at the Gray Zone by Alex Rubenstein, and he's connected Tinubu to heroin running and money laundering in the United States, where they've got a screen grab of the actual indictment of Tinubu some years ago, and then he left the country and it landed softly by the looks of it. He's a Nigerian fellow, so I mean they've got in the leadership in that area pliable actors to motivate the various countries and members of ECOWAS to take part in what it looks like it's going to be a vast regional war with Algeria and Burkina Faso, among two of the countries saying that they will resist anything that ECOWAS does against Niger in this. So this looks like it could be a real mid-continental conflict here.
I think that is a possibility, and I think that would be pretty disastrous. I think the level of violence already in the Sahel is from Boko Haram violence in Nigeria to Nigerian military to Somalia with Al-Shabaab. There's jihadist violence that's been going on for a number of years, and there's, you know, in many of those cases, beyond the Libya example, you know, if you look at like Somalia, Al-Shabaab basically got massively expanded because the Americans pushed Ethiopia to invade in 2006, and you know, just the links between, and Canada of course backed that, not in a important way, but a substantive way. So the need for peace across the Sahel is very high, and we should
say, though, Eve, sorry to step in, but the Sahel region is the area as described, which encompasses 10 or so different countries in the midsection, often called the belt or the girdle of Africa.
Yeah, so basically south of the Sahara, south of North Africa, and from Nigeria in the west to Somalia in the east. Yeah, I don't know enough about the internal military structure within Niger. Clearly, there's a faction of the military that launched the coup, and the faction that Canada, the U.S. Have been training, at least according to a Wall Street Journal article, the special forces happened to be, when this move against the president took place, they happened to be far from the capital, and so their kind of ability to potentially be to reverse the coup was lessened because of that. So we know that there's important links between Canada, the U.S., and important elements of the military. So it's always possible that, and I'm certain in the background there's lots of pushing and pulling and whatever going on between by U.S. and French and Canadian officials with their allies in the Nigerian military. Is the idea here with the ECOWAS pressure just to sort of build that pressure to the point where you lead to, you know, more dissent within the military, and you hope it doesn't get to a point of an actual foreign military intervention? I don't know enough about the sort of dynamics there. Obviously, there's also a lot of hype in the Western media about Russia, the Wagner Group sending forces, as they have in some of the bordering countries that are more allied with the Niger military now. I think some of those dynamics are, I think that as a macro, you don't want, a military coup is usually a bad thing. A foreign military intervention is almost always a bad thing, and a worse bad thing than a coup. So what I think is most important from a Canadian perspective is to have our government make it clear that we're not nudging ECOWAS or, you know, Nigeria and or other regional countries to militarily intervene. Maybe what's happened in Niger is not a good thing. I'm not certain one way or another, but I'm pretty confident that nudging outside countries to militarily intervene is definitely could spiral into all kinds of negative directions.
Well, of course, Canada has done just that. They have said, and I'll quote Global Affairs, they say, Canada supports the mediation efforts of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. We call on those all responsible to release President Bazoum. This is the coup president. But if Canada is supporting the measures, efforts taken by ECOWAS, one of those efforts is a military one. And so Canada, it seems to me, is giving the green light to ECOWAS to, quote, return constitutional order in Niger. There is, already, worse still than a coup is And a counter coup is a civil war. And now Al Jazeera is reporting just today that there's a sub element within the military in Niger, the council, they call themselves the Council of Resistance for the Republic. And they're making noises against the coup now. So it looks like this could be riven into some kind of civil war between military factions. And you should be, you mentioned in your article, and it should be remembered too, your article being Democracy Far Down the List of Canadian Interests in Niger at eveangler.com, that there's thousands of foreign troops already in the country, in Niger, Canadian, or not Canadian, but American and French primarily, and some, 40 or 50, I think you said, Canadian military personnel of various descriptions.
Yeah, there's the, I think either Global Affairs or Department of National Defense claim there's only 10 currently in Canadians in troops in Niger, but the annually there's 50 that have been participating in the operation Naberis, I think is pronounced it. And there's also some German, I think there's a couple hundred German and Italian troops. So it's a pretty militarized, foreign militarized place. It's clearly been a very big base. The Americans have an important drone base, cost like more than $100 million that they set up. I believe in the north of the country, so it's been a hub of NATO military activity in the region, and you're totally right that so far where we're at with the Canadian government is that they are openly prodding ECOWAS to this ultimatum that ECOWAS gave of. The military has a week to reverse the coup, or else we will invade. They stated, the Canadian government has publicly said, not directly but indirectly publicly said that they're supporting this position of ECOWAS. So that should definitely be questioned and pushed back. And the other side to some of this is there are Canadian mining interests in the country. There's some uranium mining operations. The Canadian company took Niger to an international tribunal, I believe, back in February or March of this year, and as I detail in that article, SAMAFO, Montreal company, which I believe no longer exists, it began the first large scale mining operation, gold, in Niger back in 2000, and they just to get a sense of like how the power that Canadian mining companies have and also how they operate. There's a wild story from the Montreal Gazette business section back in 2007 where the head of SAMAFO boasts about how he's works closely with the prime minister and how he's involved in budget decisions, but then also boasts about how the prime minister, there was a strike at the mine, and the prime minister showed them how to basically fire, crush the union, fire all these employees, as the head of the Canadian Mining Company put it, because they'd been on strike a few times, and so openly talking about just crushing union, firing everyone. And when you look at what we're talking about in terms of wages and conditions of these mine workers, I mean, this is horrendous wages. So anybody with an ounce of sensitivity to humanity would be backing the demands of the striking workers.
Not only did they talk about this openly, but this guy gormlessly crowed about it like this was a great achievement, and like, hey, isn't this great, everybody? We crushed these guys, and now they can go back to being slaves. Eve, sadly, we're fast out of time, but again, you simply must go to eveangler.com to read Democracy Far Down the List of Canadian Interests in Niger and all the rest of your work. Eve, it's inspiring to see this and to get Eve's books on Canadian foreign policy and to dispel yourself of this miasma, this dream of what this country is and where it came from. Thanks a lot, Eve, for coming on again. There's much more, of course, that we don't have time to cover on this, but I really appreciate you giving us your thoughts on it.
Thanks a lot for having me.
And stay tuned. Ray McGinnis is going to be straight up, and we're going to talk about another. Canada doesn't spare its democracy-breaking efforts abroad. Right here in Canada, the Coutts Four in prison, 500 and more days with no bail and no trial right here in Canada. So stick around for that. Thanks again, Eve.
Thanks.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York, Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.